that here if we have a tracking time also.
So today we will complete the final discussion on Ahimsa, and next week we will start with Satya. So what I'm going to try to do is that when a topic is finished, we'll try to spend some time like we're going to do today, which will just be a discussion and an opinion and practical application of what we have learned and so forth. Application of Yama Niyama is not as easy as you think. And once you understand this idea, then you become a little bit more humble, you know, because in your life you're constantly facing decisions and you want to follow Yama Niyama. But situations sometimes make it difficult for us to understand what is the right thing for us to do. Okay? So the kind of discussion we'll have today will throw some light on what it is that you know, mentally we will go through in trying to make decisions. And the same process will be applicable to not just Ahimsa, but to Satya, Asteya, and other principles of Yama Niyama. Today is basically, there's no new material, but I will be, so to say, having discussion, which means asking you if you understood things or not. I'll be asking questions. That also gives me a gauge of how much, you know, you understood. No, and, you know, I will expect that you will do a little bit of a study on your own. Because please remember that the purpose is not just practice by you, but also that eventually I expect that some of you will take some time to teach others too. And it is important to realize that Yama Niyama is not just a practice that you follow. But you may be a bhakti pradhan, you may be elected official, you may be in a position of responsibility where you have to not only make decisions yourself, but you have to guide others in making decisions. You have to teach your children how to make decisions. So it's not important, not just think that, okay, I know how to do, we know how to do. It's not just that. We have to understand that what we do, what we say, also has an impact on the society. And as a spiritual aspirant, we also have certain obligation to fulfill in the society. So, having said that, Yama Niyama, what would be a proper English term for Yama Niyama? What term would you say? Suppose you are teaching a class and you're talking about Yama Niyama. What would be a term that you use? What is the term we use for Yama Niyama in English?
Isn't it like the Guide to Human Conduct, right?
That's
it's
a
like
little
the book, so isn't that kind of the translation?
Well, it does give a guide, but how do you translate the word Yama Niyama?
Moral principle.
Morality. Some people say morality. Is it morality? Morality is a little bit more, you know, more random, because, you know, the people in Afghanistan and Muslims, they have one set of morality, and people have different set of morality. So the proper term is not morality, although people do use the term morality for Yama Niyama. Proper term is what? Who knows? Human cardinal principles. Okay, that's the word and term Baba uses. Yama Niyama are human cardinal principles. So human cardinal principles does not have anything to do with beliefs of a religion. In Islam, you know, if you're a woman, if you're not wearing this burqa, that's, you know, immoral. But that really doesn't have anything to do with the inherent being inside a human being. You know, those principles are not universal. Human cardinal principles, they are universal. That is the difference between morality and human cardinal principles. So don't forget that. And although morality may be a little bit random in its belief system, human cardinal principles, they are not random, but they are not set in cement. They are not concrete also. They require flexibility in application. But this flexibility is around certain principles, and that is the decision-making. Your decision-making about Jama Niyama is around those principles, and that's what we're talking about. Today, we'll be discussing those principles. What are the principles in application of Ahimsa? So, let's move very quickly, okay, because time is less. Ahimsa, how do you define Ahimsa? Did you go over that?
Yeah, I went over it.
Okay.
So it's not to do a spiritual, a physical, or mental harm to another, or
right.
prevent their progress.
Correct.
In any way.
Correct. Very good. So ahimsa means to not block someone's progress. Now, remember, Jama Niyama are human cardinal principles. That means they have something very strong to do with dharma. Dharma is basically what sustains humanity, sustains human, and supports human. And so human cardinal principles have very close relationship with dharma. So what are the principles of dharma? Quickly. What are the principles of dharma? Vistara, rasa, and seva. Right? What is vistara?
Expansion.
Expansion. Expansion of what?
Mind.
All human potential, right? Okay. Ahimsa means when you block their expansion, when you're blocking someone's vistara, that is violation of ahimsa, that is hinsa. Because there you are violating principles of dharma. So that is the definition of ahimsa. Anyway, I'm not going to review all the concepts, so I'm going to go straight into questions. Okay, here's a statement I'm going to make. Fishing is hinsa. Is it true, false, or what?
Depends.
Fishing is hinsa. Is it true?
Depends.
Sorry?
Depends.
Depends. So that means it's incomplete. It needs qualification, right? So now I will say this. Fishing, in order to eat, in order to fulfill my hunger, that is ahimsa. Is that true, false, or what?
That also depends.
That is also incomplete.
What qualification does it need?
If I have nothing else available,
right,
at that time maybe.
Right, and that we call gradation principles. Principle of gradation. That means that fishing is ahimsa if it is done for the purpose of food and satisfies the principles of gradation. Without that, it's not. Now, what are some of the reasons people do what we call hinsa or do not follow ahimsa? Some of them are what? Self-preservation. Right? So, there is a difference between application of force and hinsa. Hinsa is not the application of the force because application of force is a requirement of life. So, what are some of the reasons? One is self-preservation. So, how do you, what is a line of thinking you will maintain in self-preservation?
Physical harm to me or family members, self-preservation would be to strike back. So self-defense.
Is it? Okay.
So
make a full statement.
Self-defense. So yeah, you would use in self-defense, it would be self-preservation because you're trying to keep physically...
Okay. All right. Self-defense. He says self-defense is following ahimsa. What if I come and punch you on the face, okay? Mm-hmm. Break your tooth. Mm-hmm. What will you do? You'll put your gun out and shoot me, right?
Well, I don't have a gun, but...
Suppose you had a gun.
Yeah.
Will you do that?
No, I would probably I would do the least bit of force to make the action stop and to move on with life.
Yeah. So self-preservation is an incomplete statement. Self-preservation with judicious application of the force. Self-preservation with the judicial application. You must apply the force for defense, self-defense. Now, let's take an example. And these are real things, it's not hypothetical things. A few months ago, there was a woman alone in the house with a little baby. I think it was in the news all over. And some intruder came in. And she knew that this person was following her and all of that. And she took the gun out and shot him as he came in and killed him. How would you classify that? Ahimsa? Ahimsa? Or how would you think? Was it a judicious application of force or not? You see, it's not so easy. Somebody I was having a conversation earlier, we already know how to apply it now. If you think you know, that means you really don't know. Because Jamaniyama applications are not easy. So what would you do if that happened to you? If Subhadra is alone and she's fearing for life, somebody is chasing her, whatever, and there's a baby. So, is that judicious or not?
Subhadra, mommy.
So, these are the questions you have. What would
so
you
if
do?
If it's in an area where there is crime, and if you know that a person, there's a chance...
No, you already know that the person is after you and may harm you and stuff. You don't know, but see, what you don't know, to what extent he will harm you. So suppose he comes and, rapes. But you don't know whether that rape is going to turn into murder. So, is it a self-defense or is it a... What is the other thing we talked about?
Self-preservation.
Huh?
Self-preservation?
No.
Oh, yeah, preemptive.
Preemptive strike. So, what would your opinion be? What would your opinion be? See, what I mean is there's no right and wrong. It depends on the woman. If the woman didn't have a child, didn't fear, and had the sufficient courage to face the man, as some women do, then it would be inappropriate. Person has a child and fears for the life of child, although not sure, because you really don't know. You really don't know whether the person will do that. But you are justified in preemptive strike in this case. If that was what was in the mind of this woman, which she said in the media and in the court. So, you see, it's a very difficult thing to do. If it's a man, if it's a strong man, and he's reasonably aware of the fact that the person doesn't have a gun or something, and if he shoots that gun, it would be a violation of ahimsa. If I punch you, I'm really mad at you, it'll break your tooth. You pull out your gun and shoot me. Yes, I hit you first. But what you did was, not just, and you would have problem. And you might see that in real life also, the law are also interpreted in this way. It's not just our philosophy. Laws are that way too. So, self-defense, and of course there are attorneys and the code, legal code is set up with this idea in mind. So, what is one of the most important things in determination of whether it's ahimsa or not? What is the single most important thing?
Yeah, intention.
Intention. What's the intention of a person? Let's take an example, war. Or what is the general principle set on war and ahimsa?
Whether it's a defensive attack or it's an offensive
Right, but let's say you are a soldier. Mm-hmm. Okay, defensive attack or offensive attack is determined by the general. Mm-hmm. But the common soldier is fighting on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Common soldier doesn't have this decision to make.
I think war is a special occasion. It's either you kill me or I kill you. Yes. No,
so let's start from the perspective of the soldier. Would he be committing hensai if he killed another soldier?
No.
Well, I think it depends on that too. I mean, if,
right.
if the soldier's
exactly.
sitting there eating dinner and he goes up and kills him from the back, I think that's a hensai.
Yeah.
No?
So whether or not somebody kills him, once again, is an incomplete statement. Okay. Now, if the soldier is in your camp, he's your prisoner, and you shoot him, right? That's hensai. What if the person has raised the white flag and you shoot him? So I would say that's hensai, right? But sometimes, and this also actually happened, that during Second World War, they would raise the white flag, and then when they come to take them away, they will start shooting and kill. So those are the things. Now, that is also the reason, do you know about Geneva Convention? You know about Geneva Convention? Geneva Convention is, people of the world, global community got together and they said that, look, you know, there should be a proper treatment of the soldier because soldier is a more or less a pawn in the game. He's not the one making decision. He is going out there to fulfill his dharma. Just like Arjun was fighting. You remember in the war of Mahabharata, Lord Krishna told Arjuna, you are the soldier. You have to follow Kshatriya Dharma. And you are the king and you have to fight. This is your dharma. So are the soldier on the battlefield. And the general says, go out there and conquer these out there. And, you know, if somebody gets in the way, you have to shoot them. That becomes his dharma. So generally speaking, in such a condition, this is not considered hinsa. But once again, if you violate Geneva Convention and harm somebody, then it is hinsa. And that's why Geneva Convention is set up, for the proper treatment of the soldiers and the prisoners. Wartime is a very interesting time. Wartime brings about the worst and the best of the human being. So in the war you may see, here's another very important principle of ahimsa, that sometimes for the well-being of many, a few has to give life, a few lives have to be taken. Few lives have to be taken. If you imagine somebody had succeeded, suppose somebody had succeeded in killing Hitler early enough, that would have been ahimsa, but it is ahimsa. Because that would have saved millions and millions of people on the planet. During Muslim invasion in India, what happened? Do you know what happened to the Buddhist monks? Buddhist monks were slaughtered. Like animals, they just go, just kill them. They go on their horseback and they just kill them. So many monks. And Buddhist monk followed principle of non-violence. What happened? What was the result? What happened, huh? Not only died, but you are inviting. You are motivating others to commit hinsa. When hinsa is not checked and stopped, you are inviting more hinsa. Okay? So remember that use of the judicial force and use of the force is a last recourse. If I punch you and you punch me right back, perhaps that's not a good thing to do. Why? It wasn't the last recourse. You should have asked, well, why did you punch me? You know, I can punch you too. I can really break your tooth too. Did you think before punching me? You know. And, you know, there are certain damages. You're going to pay those damages? You're going to pay my medical bill? You see? So, those are the recourses that you have. And if he disagrees, in the end, you can punch him. So, use of the judicious force also should be a matter of last recourse. You understand, there was some person telling me it's very easy. It's not very easy. Application of Jama Niyama requires mental balance and proper thinking. Go ahead.
We've been discussing about Jama Niyama. You know, a lot of those situations we don't face on a day-to-day, like murder, people coming to the house, murder people, or war situation. We don't face them. It's important. But I have one issue to raise, because we probably encounter them on a day-to-day basis, and has been bothering me. See, we have insects in the house, right? What do you do with those insects? They are alive too.
Well, what is people's opinion? Let me just comment on this. It's not a day-to-day. Every act teaches you something. You may not face murder in your life, but what it does is makes you think what emotion, mental emotions, okay? What are the mental emotions? If you face those emotions, may not be murder, maybe something else, you know? So it's important to consider all these things. Okay, who would like to give their opinion about insects?
Spiders in the bus.
What is your opinion? What is your opinion? Why don't you start with you yourself?
Because what do I do with them? I don't like to kill them. I don't like to kill them. They didn't,
okay,
you know, endanger my life. They are alive too. You know, they have feeling too. What do you do with them?
What do you do? What would you do with them?
I take them out and then they come back, and on a day-to-day basis, I do this again and again and again. I get tired. And sometimes
so,
they drop into the water, they die, I feel sad. But, and some people like to invite the, you know, Terminix people come to the house and kill them all. And personally, I don't feel like, you know, if there is another way to get them out of the house without killing them, I like to do that. Tried, it didn't work.
So then what's your conclusion, or what's your point?
I don't have a conclusion.
Do you have a point?
My point is that, what do we do in this kind of situation? I have
a
question.
What would you
do? I have
do?
A question.
What would you do first? Begin with that.
I'm still discovering a way to get them out of the house without killing them.
How about Sanjeev?
Generally, I don't kill them. So if there is a spider, I try to put it on paper and try to put it outside.
Yeah.
I mean, if it comes, it comes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if there is a snake, I don't know, maybe at that time I'll call somebody else to take care of that, because
right.
I cannot take care of. Same thing with rodent. In fact, I was living in a house, and for almost 4 years, this rat was there, and it was damaging all our clothes, but we never got around killing it. We would put some cheese, and so that the rat is distracted, so it will come and eat the cheese and not harm our clothes.
Oh.
So that's what we. But eventually, our landlord, he said that becomes a problem for him, because he can be liable if something goes wrong. So he got some his exterminator or those guys come and do something.
Yeah,
I mean it's a. But that's my personal thing. I mean, I don't know what is right or wrong.
Well, why don't you know what's right or wrong?
I think if I can live with them without harming, I think I would do that.
What are the principles? Intention. Begin with the principle of intention.
Okay, so if it is harming, if for some reason my life is in danger because of that animal, at that time I would, because according to Yama Niyama also, the higher the evolution,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if there is a situation where lower evolved animal needs to be sacrificed to support higher evolved animal, then I would do that.
Yeah. And tiger will kill you too, although tiger is a lower force.
Yeah,
if a tiger saw you and ran into you, he's not going to think that is
because, because tiger doesn't know yama yama.
Right. That's what I mean. That's what I mean. So, but the important thing is intention, Lina. What is the intention? If you take up a spider and put it out this way, what was your intention? Your intention, you didn't want to take the life. Compassion. This was your driving force for doing what you did. Other person might call Terminix. You know, they may have, again, they may have tried in different ways to control, didn't work, they call Terminix. So the point is, it's not an absolute. That's what is right for you, that's what is right for that person. But the intention, is it your intention to take a life? That's not your intention.
Yeah. I was reading somewhere, and I want to bring that moral here. So there was a small story when I was a kid. So this saint was there, or sannyasi, and he was doing meditation, and this scorpion will come and sting him. And after he'll remove the scorpion and keep it aside, then again the scorpion will come and sting him. And he kept doing, and then there was another guy who was sitting there. He said, why can't you kill it? That it's like unnecessary, it's coming and stinging. If you kill, then Kada, you know what? He's following his dharma.
Right.
As a scorpion, his dharma is to sting.
Right.
I, as a human, I am like Kshama. Kshama is what?
Yeah.
Forgiveness. Forgiveness. That's my dharma. I don't know how far one can follow that principle. But
the thing is, let's look at that story. The story is there for a purpose and it teaches something. But at the same time, you know, if you do not stop hinsa, you are inviting greater hinsa. Just like I said, that Muslim came in and invaded in India, and India did not stop it. And the net result, they came even bigger and killed more people. So that is why army and armed forces are important. You know, Baba always said that, you know, just because we have universal society doesn't mean there will not be any need for army. No, armed forces are necessary. Mm-hmm. When people know that there are armed forces, people know here that the police is effective, and that is why a lot of people are not committing crime. And so having that force in itself prevents hinsa. So these are, if you do not demonstrate that force, you are inviting more hinsa. Okay? Anybody else? I'll move on to the next one. And I want to give real examples that, okay, what is another factor affecting your decision, whether hinsa, ahimsa, whatever? Your most important thing is what your intention is. Okay, if your intention is not bad, that's a starting point. That's not enough, but that's a very important starting point. Then, do I have to apply the force? And if so, how much? But before applying that force, are there other recourses I can take? If no other recourses are there, I have to apply force. How much force must I apply? What is my intention? Am I doing out of the anger? Am I doing to hurt the person? Or am I doing for self-defense? Or am I doing it for him so that it's a preemptive strike? Preemptive strike is very important. Sometimes we blame politicians, but they are not so stupid. You know the word MAD, mutually assured destruction. Do you know about that principles? It's called MAD principle. MAD, or the mutually assured destruction, is the key to nuclear peace. Nuclear peace, okay? Nuclear peace, not nuclear lack of peace, nuclear peace. When I know, when when United States knows if Soviet Union can come back and wipe us out, then I will not attack Soviet Union. And Soviet Union knows that United States can come, so then they will not attack. But if Soviet Union thinks that by having a preemptive strike upon United States, that United States will not be able to retaliate back, what will it do? It will inspire them to do preemptive strike. So the principles of MAD, mutually assured destruction, which was followed by United States and Soviet Union, was in fact, they wanted to maintain the parity. They wanted to maintain parity. And that's the reason, who was that guy, perestroika guy, the Russian Prime Minister?
Gorbachev.
Gorbachev did not agree to fourth Star War weapon system. Okay. Reagan said, well, it's a defense. And Gorbachev says, no, it's a defense. But in calculation, it can become offense. Because if I can defend against your incoming missile, now suddenly I have a superiority of attacking. You know. So in nuclear exchange, there is no defense and offense. Everything is offense. So my point is this, that the peace was maintained by force. Crazy as it sounds, but mutually assured destruction prevented nuclear strikes.
It's called the nuclear deterrent. They call it
Nuclear deterrent. But not only deterrent, but sufficient balance. You know, sufficient balance. If you don't have sufficient balance, and suppose I strike you, what do? I strike your weapon system first, not your cities and people, so that you cannot strike me back. And then I strike your weapon system, then I go and say, Sanjeev, you surrender, you gone. You don't have anything to hit me. I don't want to kill your people. So it is not simply deterrent, but deterrent is achieved by having this balance. So in Ahimsa also, what we are saying is that you must maintain certain awe of force. Otherwise, society and evil forces in the society will disturb the peace. Coming back to preemptive strike, what is your opinion about who, do you remember in late 70s, early 80s, Israel did a preemptive strike on Iraq? Do you remember that?
No, I mean, I heard last time.
Yeah? I'm sure you guys don't remember, right?
No.
Israel again did preemptive strikes.
Even a couple of days ago, they did in Syria, they did a strike on their weapons.
Because Israel is so small
that
within a matter of minutes, they can finish it. It's such a small country. So Iraq was on the verge of gaining the weapon system, so he did not wait. He just ran and finished it. You know. So preemptive strikes are dangerous. And this woman that we talked about, she did a preemptive strike. The intruder came in the house. You know. And the intruder hadn't attacked her yet. So she didn't do a self-defense, she did a preemptive strike. So principles of ahimsa requires that you must maintain certain degree of force. Sadvipra must maintain certain degree of force, otherwise everything in the whole society will be messed up. Now another important point in ahimsa is what I said, that for the good of many, sometimes hinsa of few becomes a necessity. And bad as it may sound, you know, in retrospect, there are many examples in history that will prove that situation, such as Hitler, Stalin, all these people who are epitome of evil. should have been wiped out early enough. So, in human evolution too, because of the greed and materialistic power, these forces predominate. And Sadvipra has to take the charge of the leadership. Dharmic leadership means taking the position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cannot say, I'm a neutral. You go away. You're neutral, well, they're going to come back again after you. In Vietnam War too, there, you know, we only see one side of the story. Vietnam War was a very unpopular war in America. And the history will say that it was a very evil thing. What the United States was done was a very evil thing. But there's a lot more to those things. When you look at the facts. So, in the application of hinsa and ahimsa, facts are also very important. It should be fact-based. If you are not fact-based, then it becomes ahimsa versus ahimsa. There was no question that in those years, Soviet Union and China, they were very heavily involved in spreading communism around the world. There's no question about it. Based on the documents now that have been released. You know, after so many years, they released those documents. And so Kennedy and the United States wanted to curtail the communism. This was the prime reason they went there. So, same way with the weapons of mass destruction, I just recently learned. You know, it was a very terrible war, right? George Bush went in there in the name of weapons of mass destruction and wiped out Saddam Hussein, right? And people say, well, this was just an excuse to carry out the war. Yeah, well, it turns out that there's a little bit more to it than that. And once again, this is an example of the facts, how the facts can affect. What had happened, which is only recently released, that there was a spy from Iraq who had penetrated into a German system, spy system, and he had actually become a spy working for Germany. He was an Arab from Iraq. He was very upset with Saddam Hussein and wanted that regime destroyed. So he came in and he created completely false information about the weapons of mass destruction. What he said was that weapons of mass destruction are being transported on a truck, and that is why you're not able to find it. Before you find it, he moves it out. And he did the pictures and drawings and everything, and it became formal, and they went after that. So the point is that the whole war was misguided based on the wrong information. And you are responsible for that action. So the facts are also of extreme importance. Another question. You know, during the Second World War, many Japanese were mobbed in Hawaii. You know that story? You know? Have you heard about that? What is your opinion about it?
About the Japanese being put in camps? Let me think about it for a second before I get an answer.
Another example is today, suppose Arabs are coming in, going through the security system. Just because they are Arabs, you go through and examine them more carefully. What is your opinion about that? Just because you're an Arab, just because you're wearing Arab clothes. You know? What would you say? What is your opinion about it?
I think discriminating based on something that you're inherently born
discriminating
on something you're inherently born with, such as your race or your gender,
yeah,
and perhaps even your religion, depending, it shouldn't be something that just
because... So what is your opinion? Do you think it is improper?
Well, the Japanese internment camp, I think, was completely wrong.
It was wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is your opinion?
Well, it's definitely wrong. I was wondering, what was their justification for doing that?
Okay.
What made
facts.
Them think their own citizens?
Facts. Those are the things. Facts are becoming... What is the justification? Justification was this. Pearl Harbor had just been attacked. Many people had died. United States was into the war. In fact, U.S. Navy was practically wiped out. Very dire consequences. Japanese were there on the island. And United States at that time said that there are a lot of Japanese who are spying for Japan. This was what was released to the public. Now, 50 years later, they released the actual document. And the actual document shows that there were certain Japanese had provided key information about through the pictures of the Pearl Harbor. So that Japanese precisely knew which ship was where at what time. And that is why they came and attacked and destroyed it. So it is in fact true. Now it is established by the facts.
But so say five people were involved in that. You are putting an entire race into camps.
What would you do? If you had a prime minister, if you had a president of the United States, what would you do?
I would gather more intelligence because, again, I don't think discriminating against a whole race.
But what if you don't get that intelligence? How would you know? Like this too, right?
How would you know? You wouldn't know. But
would
to put 100,000 people and take away their liberties because of three people that may or may not be wouldn't be justification.
True. But the thing is this, it's not a matter of those three people. But by putting 100,000 in a camp, you may be saving millions of general public, right?
Maybe not.
Again, facts. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is why it becomes very critical. And as a president of the United States, you also have to face a time window. Okay? Japanese just came and destroyed your navy. What do you think next Japanese will do? What will they do? They will probably come back with a second strike.
No, but attacking Japan, okay, I understand that part. But these people who are living in the United States, they were citizens.
U.S. citizens, right.
And I'm not trying to say anything.
Yeah.
But that doesn't preclude a white man not being a spy.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
Correct.
I mean, there have been examples where people of same community have been double spy or double agent, or they have destroyed the country. So I think, as a president, it becomes my moral responsibility to take care of my citizens. I mean, so I would not do that.
You wouldn't do it?
No.
What kind of risk would you run by not doing it?
In fact, I would not run any risk. In that 100,000 cases, I would have created much more antagonism against Americans than if I trusted on them. Because out of those 100,000, I'm not saying I don't have facts. But maybe after the concentration camp was over, maybe 10,000 of those, they were totally, they might have become terrorists. I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
The chances are you are.
There you go. There's one explanation, very valid explanation. But here's the thing. You are in a rational state of mind. When you are a president and people are expecting you to protect them. He's not worried about Japanese bombing and killing a bunch of people in Hawaii. He's worried about losing the whole naval force, whatever was left over. And then next attack will come on the California and Alaska. So, thing is this, that I would probably do what FDR did. You probably wouldn't do, she probably wouldn't do. I think that for the protection of the larger continental United States, I would not kill those people. I would just move them into a camp. It's a temporary inconvenience that they do have to go through for the larger good. Even today, if I have to check the Arabs more, I will check Arabs more as a security agent. And of course, like you said, the white people can also be the terrorist. But when you look at the actual terrorists that have been arrested, you know, most of them are the Arabs. Most of them attacking they are at 90% plus. So statistically speaking, why not check them more? I mean, why is it such a big issue that you're checking them? Now, there comes the individual liberty, and Ida's individual liberty. Would you sacrifice those individual liberty for the possible improved security? So these are the issues and things you have to consider before you label something Hinsa, Ahinsa, right, wrong.
Yeah, I think in general I've seen politics is all Hinsa. I mean, look at this case. Today we are talking about this Snowden person. And he may be considered a traitor because he...
Edward Snowden? You know, don't know.
Okay, so he went and leaked this NSA, National Security Agency. They were spying on people like you and me. No, not me. I mean, okay. I'm not an important person. But even everyone. So he went ahead and he said, okay, NSA should not be doing that.
Right.
The moment he released that, his citizens, I think his passport was cancelled or something happened.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he's sitting in Russia.
He's sitting in where? Russia.
Russia.
Russia gave him asylum.
Asylum.
Oh, he's an American?
Yeah, he's an American. If you see from which angle you see, I mean, today he is considered a traitor. Why? Because NSA thinks that it was...
Who thinks he's a traitor? A lot of Americans?
National Security Agency. NSA.
Okay, and in fact, if he comes to US, he'll put him in the jail. That's
oh, really?
For sure. Oh, yeah. Now, I don't know in this
case... How would they be able to do that? He hasn't done any harm to the country.
No.
He has
released secret documents
so
to the public. NSA secret documents. He was an employee of NSA.
I see.
So he was working for United States CIA or something.
Right.
So now I don't know what is greater good here. Whether spying on millions of people's phone.
Right.
And I mean,
right.
Is there any greater good if I'm tapping everyone's phone?
Right.
Basically, what is happening is,
right.
Basically, we are all in jail.
Yeah.
I mean, that it's our liberty, right? You took away our liberty.
Right.
Now, has he done anything like wrong in this one? So these kind of questions, I think
they're very, very good questions. It is very hard. And that's what I'm trying to...
Yeah, so this NSA thing, I think, given the condition the world is in, with so much hatred towards America and people trying to bomb any smallest chance, so the government, what they're trying to do is to get any kind of a sick code word people are using, trying to use... Like if they're sending emails about it or phone calls about this terrorist attack, they want to catch this before it happens. And according to their records, they have had a lot of success using this method. So we don't know that overall, when you look at it as you say your government is spying on us, but then we don't know the advantage that we have received because of their spying.
No, but Angela Merkel, I mean, it seems that came like her phone was tapped.
Yeah.
I mean, as a premier of a country, I think, I mean, I would not expect her to do any sort of terrorism against US.
So that is not, that people are saying that basically US has spied on every lot of 25, 30 different presidents, their phones they've been tapping. They're saying that every country does it to each other country. It's known between the spying. It's not that US is...
spying is completely normal.
Everyone is doing against each other.
And killing too. They go and kill.
Oh, yeah.
CIA goes and kills.
No, that is one of their jobs.
They're criminals. But the thing is that, you know, there is a balance.
Yeah.
Balance is very important in individual freedom. And it is also what it is that that person believes. What is it that he believes? Did he release anything significant that would harm the country or not?
No, they're saying he did. I mean, America is saying he did because the terrorists use those information to protect themselves better.
Oh, I see.
Like that, so.
The protocol and method that NSA uses. Now, why would he disclose that? See, that's where you have to check intention.
Well, I don't know what is his intent.
Exactly. So, Jamaniyama means what? Intention.
Yeah.
What was the intention of that person? Was it to do with the individual freedom? What relevance did it have with this individual? So, these questions, although they are happening at this level, but you can see that analysis is the same.
Yeah.
And you should not do that if you have anybody. Like, suppose, let's forget about the country, your family. Suppose you are in a joint family, cousin, uncle, you know, you have 8-9 people. And you have some sensitive family information. Suppose in India, you're trying to get your sister married. And certain things you don't want to disclose and something. And one of your cousin goes and discloses, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to be start watching out for that cousin's sister and that cousin's parents. And you're not going to think that he's a human, he's equal human being. You're going to start to think that, you know, he did it, maybe his wife will do it, maybe his son will do it. Keep an eye on that. At that time, you don't think.
No, it's hard.
At that level, higher level,
Presidents
are faced with that situation.
Sure. No, I think it's...
And that is why, you know, when you are a leader, that's why I think I was having a conversation with Shubhada, and Lina said, oh, day to day. It's not day to day. All this situation, you may be a Bhakti Pradhan, and you are responsible for the unit. You may be senator, you are responsible for the country and the state. And you have to use those principles of Jamaniyama in achieving these things.
No,
what it also means is that you should become more humble. You should not quickly judge situation. Just because you don't like George Bush, you should not quickly judge his action. What information did it have that we didn't have? What information that National Security Agency has had as a result of which we have been safe? How many times have they uncovered the terrorist activities, right? So all these things are very critical, but behind all of that, the key thing is intention.
My mom had a question, and more on our personal life, family life level. So she said, if your husband and wife is there, and then one of them is vegetarian, one of them is non-vegetarian. Husband is non-vegetarian, wife is vegetarian. So, how is it okay for a wife to cook non-vegetarian food for the husband?
What do you think? Always ask the person asking the question what their opinion is and why. That's a very good question. Excellent. Why talk about this atomic weapon? But this is a very difficult question. What would you do?
What do you think? She's saying for the good relationship of the family, it's okay to cook to the husband.
What would you do?
He's an American. He's a good guy.
So he's a vegetarian.
Yeah, I don't think I would cook it. I think I would cook the vegetarian food and.
Well, what if Angela wanted to eat meat and she's a meat eating person?
I'd have to say you gotta cook it yourself because I don't want to cook. What I cook is providing for the family in the way I'd like to provide it, and if they wanted to eat something different, then they'd have to go get the food.
Yeah. Perception, you see, and culture. What would you do?
Again, this point I wanted to bring. See, typically what happens is any of these principles, they never come alone.
Yes.
They always come with two, three other principles.
Yes.
So I'll see which principle is above. So if there is a ranking of principles, I'll go with the top rank, and I try to follow that. And then, I mean...
Very important point. Actually,
yeah.
Explain that a little better. Did everybody understand that? That's a very good point.
Yeah, because that's what I've seen, that ahimsa or lying or anything, they never come alone.
Yeah.
They'll have like three, four things together.
Yeah.
So I will see which one is the most important thing which I need to follow. So if pati dharma is, according to like Indian thing, if pati dharma is highest, then I will follow pati dharma and then I'll sacrifice some other dharma. But let us say if for her ahimsa is highest and whatever happens to pati is not, then I'll follow ahimsa. So I'll see what is the highest level of thing which I need to follow. And then I'll do the lower one little bit less.
So because he's become more humble, that is why he understands that this is situation. Now let's analyze a little bit more. This actually happened with my mother. This actually happened. My mother, because my older brother, Suresh, was eating meat. When we came, we were vegetarian. My mother is a conservative girl from a small village. She never looked at fish, never looked at chicken, or, you know, she had never seen any of this. But she cooked the meat. That was her decision. Now, let me ask you this. Eating meat or cooking meat in itself, is it ahimsa or not ahimsa? Just by itself. Like Sanjeev said, you have to take that. What are you doing? You're cooking meat. Okay? On the other hand, your husband eats meat, and you are really not able to convince him that you should not eat meat, right? First thing you tried is to convince him that you should not eat meat. But he said that, well, okay, I respect you, but I don't believe. I think that, you know, every life eats another life. Snake eats, you know, frog, and bigger snake eats a smaller snake. So I'm eating fish. You know, fish has all this nutrition in it. Why not? You know, you haven't made a point to me yet. So he is not convinced. So what is she doing? She's cooking fish, which she doesn't want to do. But she also is cooking for her husband, which she wants to do. Is cooking fish in itself represent ahimsa? What is your intention?
Again, intention comes in. Yeah.
What is your intention? See? So you have to see that, okay, let's look at it. You're cooking fish. Fish is already dead. You didn't go out and kill. That's one thing. It's better than having in that you have to do that. So you didn't kill the fish. Fish already killed and you cook, right? Although, I mean, it's not... You are supporting such action indirectly.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit less intense. Like I said, that there is a first degree, second degree, and third degree murder, and there's a manslaughter. The net result, somebody is dead. You're driving the car, you hit somebody, the person dies. But that's not murder, that's manslaughter. And the punishment for that is what? 6, 7 years, 5 years, 4 years. First time, 5 years. With good behavior, you can get out in 2 years. You kill somebody and you get out of it in 2 years. Why? Why? It wasn't your intention to kill that person. It was an accident. You didn't purposely ran over. If you purposely ran over, that's first degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
Although the net effect is same.
Mm-hmm.
So, law also looks at the situation and gravity and seriousness of the situation based on intention. Contract law is also. Contract law, when there is a dispute, between attorneys in a contract law. What do? They looked at what are the intentions of these guys. So here, a woman has to cook. What was her intention? Her intention is not to kill fish, but to feed her husband. So my mother thought in this way. And she said that, okay, I don't want to cook. I don't, something that I would not eat, I would not want to do. But I don't have right to take it away from somebody else who is not convinced about it. That was her simple thinking, and she cooked the meat for them. She even learned.
Yeah, a friend of mine, he eats fish, but he keeps a card in his wallet all the time. So before he orders, he picks up the card and takes out which are, there are some fishes which are
because sustainable fish.
Sustainable fishes. So he orders only those fishes which are sustainable fishes.
Sustainable meaning in which sense?
They are in farming. They have become more like a cultivation.
Okay.
So he rather eats that rather than wild, because according to, I mean, that's what his philosophy is. He says, the way we are growing corn, we are growing that, don't ask me that philosophy, but he's saying that I'm the wild one, on the other hand, they are disappearing. But this one is, so if you have to cook fish for him, cook the... So that's
eating meat in itself is not himself. In Arctic circles, right? Baba says in Alaska and places like that, eating meat is not a himself. Because that's all there is. People in the sea. There's nothing gross there. And so if you know, she may cook meat for her husband, or husband may cook for his wife or whatever. Eating meat in itself is not. But and also, you know, for medical purposes, for a short period of time also. So killing tiger in the forest is hinsa. True, false, what?
Incomplete.
Incomplete. Qualified.
Asking me. So if I'm going hunting, then it is hinsa.
Okay.
But if I'm in jungle and I know that tiger is going to kill me, then I can kill it.
That's a preemptive strike.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's the thing, that tiger doesn't know anything better. You know, tiger out of fear will attack you too.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot wait. You have to take a preemptive action. Although if you could climb on the tree and protect yourself, that's better. But then there is a fear that when you come down, he may be hiding and get you. So, you know, it's ahimsa is like that. And what you should learn from it is that do not make quick judgment about others. Don't just think that you're so smart. You know all about ahimsa, you know Baba's philosophy, and so you're the smartest person and anybody else is idiot. Don't think that way.
So I have a question here. So, and I keep asking myself sometimes that all these yama niyama, one of the, I think, preemptive presumption is that we have such a cool mind that we are able to think rationally to apply these principles.
Yeah.
Because if I'm scared, I don't remember all these principles. Right. I take the gun and shoot.
Yeah.
And then I think, oh, I should have hit on his knee or hand or somewhere. So, I don't know.
Those are the mistakes. Those are the mistakes, and they are unavoidable. But there are times when people do think rationally.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like Iraq War, Six-Day War. If you study the history of the Six-Day War of Iraq, that's exactly what happened. If Iraq had waited, and the whole was created by Soviet Union, the evil behind the war was Soviet Union. It wasn't Iraq or Egypt or Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So these things are something that there was something important I wanted to see. Oh. is something really good point I had. Preemptive strike. Here's a question for you. After First World War, Germany was defeated in the First World War. Okay? As you know, First World War happened in 1914 through 1918. Early 1900, late 1800s, were the era of colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
France, England, Dutch, they were colonizing the world and basically exploiting peoples, nations. World War I happened. And there was nothing but colonial powers fighting each other. It was European war, not American war or Asian war. It was a European war. Germans were fighting English and French because of their domination. That was the source of the war. First World War ended. Germany was stripped totally. And according to the agreement of Versailles Agreement, Germany was completely stripped and dehumanized, and it was, they created such a situation whereby Germany was, had no other recourse but to fight back. They put heavy burden of war on Germany. They charged them a lot of money and stuff, huge inflation. I mean, Germany as a country was demolished at the end of the First World War. Why did they do that? Because they were colonial exploiters, especially England. And they fought and they really suppressed Germany down. Because of that, sowed the seed for the Second World War. Now, Hitler was in First World War. He participated in First World War. They are losing. He's coming out. Germany was stripped of all army, all navy, no money, no resources. Unemployment, crime, government failure, nothing. In order to buy a loaf of bread, they go barrel full of money.
Mm-hmm.
Take big sack full of cash and pay that to get a piece of bread. Okay? Those were the situation. Hitler comes to power, okay, under these circumstances. Part of the Germany's land was taken away, Rhineland. You know Rhineland? Those are areas that were taken over by France, which was actually part of Germany. Prussia, all of that. Hitler comes to power. Hitler is a nationalist. He says that, look, it's a matter of self-defense for my country. This is how he thinks. And I believe he was justified in that thought. Because country as a whole was, you cannot imagine how, what they did to that country. Now my question to you is, at that point he was justified in, and he conducted the war. First thing he did, he attacked the Rhineland, which was part of the Germany. He captured that. You know, he built the military and he turned the whole country around. I mean, he did some incredibly visionary, impossible things. He turned the economy around from total depression into the world-class economy in a matter of 5-10 years. Then he started taking over the country that used to be German country. So he started doing that. Up to that point, as you can see, it was a self-defense and coming back of the Germany. However, the problem happened when greed took over.
Mm-hmm.
And he expanded, he started taking over Austria. Austria was also part of Germany. So even that, to some extent, you can understand. Also, don't forget, colonialism was still in their minds. So they felt justified in doing it. I'm trying to put your mind where Hitler's mind would have been at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's portrayed as a very evil man, but when you think about, in line of this principle that we've talked about, that you, in that position, may have done something similar in the beginning. In the end, he extended himself, started taking France, starting in Russia, and that all of a sudden those preemptive strikes are not justified, There was no reason for him to do that, except he believed that he had the colonial right to take over Russia, because he thought he was a superior race. And this is how the whole thing got turned around. What this tells you is that when you are coming from an injustice, what happens to your mind? I'm trying to analyze the mind. Mm-hmm. Can you and I make the same mistake?
Possibly.
You see? Why did he make that mistake? The momentum of mind, how the momentum of mind picks up, it's unstoppable. Mm-hmm. After all. And that is where meditation sadhana comes.
Mm-hmm.
You see? That jamaniyama, Baba said, without jamaniyama, sadhana is an impossibility. You cannot do sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, without meditation, jamaniyama practices are also not really effective.
Yeah.
So you should remember that.
Yeah.
And that is why preemptive strike, this is a very important point. How do you know to what extent preemptive strike is justifiable? How much confidence do I have in me for that? And that depends on my meditation, how much I meditate.